Ago in Odyssey Sports Station. The Score! Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Nick Friedel
speaks for the team that never cared about second round picks. They have a hell of a lot of second round picks now. They've got so many picks that they should put Mark Tatum, the deputy commissioner who announces those second round picks, they should have a patch for him on those jerseys right now, because this team, they have really made a shift change in the last couple days here. And all I keep thinking is they're loading up all these picks so that the time comes and they can make money off the picks later going into the draft. I mean, we all remember Jordan Bell and the hysteria around that. So, look, have they picked the lane? Yeah, it feels like it. But when your players and the talent on your roster isn't very good, this is the kind of stuff you get back.
That is the heavy hand of Nick Friedel. And it's needed at times like this.
Yikes.
His laugh sounds so good on FM. It sounded great on AM, too, but it sounds amazing on FM.
Yikes.
There was a moment in the Friedel interview where it kind of all started to hit me.
Yeah, I saw it happen to you. Can I just tell you that as your partner?
Yes.
I've figured out some of the patterns.
Okay.
As you have with me, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's how it works.
But I saw it happen to you yesterday. Like, the realization of like, oh, wait, this isn't just Lawrence cynicism. This is a real thing that's happening, and now I'm feeling it.
Yeah, and it's really not even just your cynicism. It's like an ingrained Score cynicism.
Yeah, you like to, and I think it's an important part of why you're good at this. You like to make sure that we aren't defaulting
right
to the negative.
Exactly right.
Is that fair?
Of course. It's absolutely fair, because I don't want to be lazy. It's easier to be cynical in this job.
100%.
So I want to make sure that we're allowing for the possibilities of human growth, of getting something right, of people learning and evolving, etc.
But again,
as your partner,
the thing that always worries me is when you get let down.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Right,
inside of the interview, you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Nick's making a whole lot of sense.
And
this sucks.
There was one moment, like, I precursored the question. I know you remember the one. I was like, all right, let me put aside all my thoughts of positivity, all my willful acceptance of human possibility, and let me just try and hear you a little better. So yeah, it kind of broke there. And then the IO trade, man. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, for Rob Dillingham, number 11 last year, hasn't done jack, and maybe he'll get a chance, maybe he won't, but it's just like taking a flyer, and again, no firsts. It's like a misuse of the IO asset on top of the misuse of every other asset. So you know what I ended up doing today? I looked for my old Jordan Bell $3.5 million t-shirt.
Why are you gonna? That puts us in... Okay, I mean, I get it.
And I couldn't
find it.
No, I can't find it. I got rid of it. But let me just say
I feel like Christine got rid of it.
She might have. The 14 second round draft picks that the Bulls had, if you do the math on those at 3.5 a pop, you get to $49 million. That's just $1.5 million more than the Kings are paying Zach LaVine in a contract that you signed him to. I also look back to June of 2017 when the Bulls made that 3.5. Shortly thereafter, the White Sox re-upped with Giovanni Soto and Gregory Santos. And some of that money where they purchased those contracts might have been from the 3.5. Or, Tanny, you thought maybe the Luis Robert money?
Yeah, doesn't that line up? It wasn't immediately after, but it was like the same offseason.
Yeah,
right?
So it was nice to know. So I'm not saying any of those things are connected. I'm just saying I looked for the shirt and I couldn't find it because I got broken. You saw me get broken and the broken.
I'm 37 years old, well educated.
It's the best drop we have.
He is, though. He went to Syracuse.
That doesn't mean you went to class. You know?
Oh, that's true.
He and Nick, you know, rolling heavy on the quad.
That wasn't the only thing they were rolling. And they'll tell you.
It might be true. But yes, you know me. You know me. We know each other. That's how this works. And you saw me.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. You saw me break in the middle of Nick Friedell. Because one of the things he did was he took it to the ownership level.
Well, we asked him. And look, I don't... I'm trying not to make too many assertions about Michael because I just don't know him as an owner. And now he's building as a steward. Let's call it as a steward. He's building a profile now as a steward, and we can make some judgments on that. I know that he, from the little interaction that I've had with Michael, I know that he wants to win. But as we figured out with the Bears, wanting to win and knowing how to win are very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to hire people that are going to allow for it to happen for you
is a complicated thing.
Yes.
And humanity gets in there in a big, big way. Here's Nick Friedell on Michael Reinsdorf's hire of Arturis Karnishevas.
If you're Michael, like I've been trying to figure out, I don't know Michael as well as you do, as other people do. I don't know what drives him. Do you have any idea, when it comes to him and the Bulls, what actually drives him?
Well, what drives him the most is making money. Let's be real clear about that first. If fans keep loading up the United Center and coming to see Benny spill popcorn on everybody, then Mike and the board there will be happy because they are making money. And what's scary, guys, is when you talk to people in the organization, certainly they understand that the on-court product is terrible and it's run poorly. But what they'll tell you is everything else about the organization usually is run pretty well. And people are loyal and they've stayed there and everything else is pretty solid. But the problem is in professional sports, you get judged on your product that you're putting out there every night. The Bulls product is terrible, but as far as Lawrence's motivation, I've always believed this about Mike and this hire with Karnisovas and Eversley. This was the first hire he got to make. This wasn't his dad. This was his choice. And he just doesn't want to accept that he's wrong. I mean, it was a bad hire that has gotten significantly worse over time. And again, even if you accept, okay, hey, the Bulls are making some better moves. They're getting back these second-round picks that they couldn't care less about years ago. Karnisovas and Eversley never should be in the place that they're in right now to try and redo a rebuild. It was their mess that they're getting out of. And the fact that they're still here is just another laughable part of the Bulls' experience.
That's a guy who knows the players and brings it to a personal level, which we have encountered, Lawrence, in every other organization, with every other ownership group, to whatever extent. They want to feel like they've gotten it right sometimes. And not everybody gets stubborn and doubles down and triples down, but sometimes they do, and we see it. And whether they do or not is dependent on if they have good advisors around them that they listen to, mm-hmm. and things like that. And I hadn't fully considered Michael and Michael alone getting to be the guy and now wanting to stand by the hire and not realizing that you can't do it that way in this league because of this sport and how it's constructed and how aggressive you need to be. So the question that got posed by us to Marshall Harris and to others in transition, does Michael really think that AK and Mark Eversley are good enough to do this job still? Or does he know they might not be, and he doesn't want to admit it?
I hate to make people continue to feel bad about some of this stuff, but this is how an organization gets buried. This is how you end up looking up and being like, wait, that was the Derrick Rose stuff was a decade ago?
Yeah.
And you wake up and you're like, oh, that was 15 years ago?
And you wake up and you're like, Acme got hired 6 years ago.
Right. And the way that the bad decisions end up compounding, and I'll just do it from my own experience at DePaul, where you go, okay, there seems to be a little bit of momentum as Dave Leto leaves for the job at Missouri. That was 20 years ago.
DePaul has been digging out of that.
Wow.
For 20 years. And that was a second round of the NCAA tournament under Lato. And then it just like, oh, well, okay, the Jerry Wainwright hire, like, I think that makes sense. And then it doesn't work. Like, Oliver Purnell hire. Well, there's a guy that had some success at Clemson. And it just keeps getting worse. And while all of that's getting worse, the rest of the league, in this case, NCAA basketball, is completely changed.
Yeah.
So now you're not just chasing former success. You're chasing an environment that has grown exponentially. And that's where the Bulls are at right now.
Yeah, you're right. And that's why when Nick says that he talks to all these other people around the league and front offices around the league, and they're all like, man, it's the Kings who are the worst. And then it might be the Bulls. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Pelicans. But, like, that's what you're talking about with the bottom five at a minimum in the NBA. This is how they are looked at because they just have kept going, throwing good money after bad, throwing extensions after bad hires, and doubling and tripling down. And that appears to be what they're doing again.
It makes me so sad. And we're both advocates for this city. And people who listen to The Score, the person that's listening right now, they love this city. The fact that we can't get anyone to love it from the outside the way that we know how great it is from the inside when it comes to free agents, especially in the NBA.
Basketball free agents more than anything.
Go back to us having conversations in 2010. And we're like, why wouldn't LeBron want to come here?
Right. And Michael Jordan being upset and the whole world knowing it and revering him, and the next generation embodied by Dwayne Wade and others who carried that forward was absolutely a component.
And so you get that, right? And then that filters, and the Bulls get lucky. They get the 1.8% chance to get Derrick Rose.
Yeah, they should be a team that doesn't need to get lucky to get better.
And guess what? They still do. They still need to get lucky to get good.
Oh.
And it's a terrible place for them to be. And those of us who lived through the Jordan years don't understand it because we're like, well, it's great.
You know what's funny, though? They got lucky to get Jordan.
They did.
You know, because the Portland Trailblazers are like, Sam Bowie, that's our dude.
But then what happened? There was building around Michael Jordan.
Because they found the star. And this is where the nature of the sport and the nature of the league comes into play. Billy Donovan's a really good coach.
I agree.
He's a Hall of Fame coach with very good reason. But a coach doesn't turn you around in the NBA. He doesn't really even help you build like a super team or a championship team. Greg Popovich is a great coach. Eric Spoelstra is a great coach, and they have built cultures. But you think Greg Popovich was winning titles without Tim Duncan or David Robinson? You know, no, he didn't. He had built decent teams in there in the in between. But now they've got Wemby, and now that raises the thing.
Man, you know what? It would become one of my favorite things now is watching Wemby. Where he is going towards the basket and he just calls for it and they throw it up and then he just catches, turns, yeah. And dunks it.
And then he's already in position to run back the other way.
It is uncanny how good his feet are for someone who is 7'5".
So as Friedel,
sorry, I just wanted to have some joy.
Good. Oh, man, that's the show. So as Friedel is talking about Michael not wanting to admit things, and I was texting with friends about that today. I kept thinking about George McCaskey, okay? And George makes some hires, and he hires Ryan Poles, who he can muscle around if need be, young and excitable guy. And he lets Ryan Poles hire Matt Eberflus, a guy that he can muscle around if need be. And then Kevin Warren thankfully gets hired as president and convinces him that he needs to have a strong-ass football coach. Because in the NFL, unlike the NBA, a strong-ass football coach can really change things, especially if they're an offensive wizard. And he convinces George to fire a coach in the middle of the damn season and to get out of contracts and to give $14 million or more to the coach.
And like, change your process for how you go about doing this.
All of it. And so that's why, who's around Michael?
I don't know.
Who's around Michael who's really a legit basketball person with bona fides who can tell him, hey, man, you're doing it wrong, because he's clearly doing it wrong. And it's, I don't know who that is, but it doesn't seem like that person is in there advising him. Say what you want about Kevin Warren and the stadium stuff is a mess, and we're going to get to that and all of that. But you and I agree, him convincing George to allow the hire is a game changer.
I think it may be more important for the football operation than even the stadium stuff. The fact that they were able to streamline the coaching search, isolate a target that made sense, and not just like, hey, we got this idea from some old football guy that we talked to. They basically didn't have to go outside the house, and that's what the Bears have been doing. They have been going outside the house.
Dude, they're going to Bill Polian, going to Ernie Accorsi, going to a search team.
People who did not have their best interest at heart.
Yep.
And now, for all of the flaws of Kevin Warren, and there are plenty, the fact that he was able to walk in and say, there's a better way to do this.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
Like, to bring a level of professionalism and organization to the organization.
Yes.
And then say, okay, Ryan, now that you've done this properly, what do you think?
And remind them that in the football world, it's okay to have an alpha badass who might be a little psycho as your head coach. It's okay. And in that sport, he helped him. I don't know who the person to help Michael is, and I don't know if that person is on staff.
Yeah, those are really good questions. Ones, the answers to which we may not find out until much, much later down the road. Or maybe we'll find it out at the end of the year. Maybe there will be changes at the end of this thing. Who knows? We'll let you hear from AK later on in the show. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I feel like the stadium stuff is reaching a level of interest for us to discuss.
Yeah, there's some things happening that, frankly, I didn't even realize were happening, that you have seen on multiple levels. People need to understand that things are going on.
Yeah, let's discuss that next here on The Score.
Listen as history unfolds. The world's biggest game. Live from San Francisco. It's Super Bowl 60. Heard exclusively on The Score in Chicago. Seahawks versus the Patriots.
The New England Patriots are back in the Super Bowl.
It's over. Seattle has won. The Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl.
Listen live this Sunday. Our coverage starts at 1. Kickoff at 5:30. Only on Sports Radio. 104.3 The Score. Westwood One Sports Production.
This segment is brought to you by Metra. Tired of starting and ending your day in mindless, brutal traffic? On Metra, you can relax and actually enjoy your commute. Plus, our 95% on-time rate means we'll get you there fast and worry-free. Metra, drive less, do more.